Once more into the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and Jake
McClure.
See, we have a lot of assumptions that we make at the beginning of this program. The first is that it is an interesting program.
No, it's exciting. It's not interesting.
An exciting program. Second, that ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls are listening. It's a great assumption to make, but it's not always accurate.
I got to think about that.
So, it is so exciting that the ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls may or may not be listening at any given time.
Hearing this grinding noise like...
It sounds like the fan in one of those big machines behind you. Yes.
There's big machines behind me?
Yes, there are machines and cupboards and things all over the place in here.
Oh.
So, well, yes, we are the Personal Wealth Coach.
Something is making a grinding noise like with... Oh.
Yes.
This is fascinating. You know, being here in this Smithsonian era...
The massive complex that is probably, what would you say, this is about 3 square feet?
10 by 10.
It's about one and a half by one and a half square
inches.
Inches.
It's about 10 feet by 10 feet, the entire of KTEM. And something in here is making a grinding noise. It sounds like a machine is... So if we suddenly, if you hear this, followed by a scream,
right,
you will know that some machine here at KTEM finally blew up and... scorched us to death or shocked us or something.
What we will know, and this is something for all of those electrical engineers out there, we know this. It's provable.
Mm-hmm.
Electronics
mm-hmm.
are powered by smoke.
That is correct.
When the smoke leaves, it no longer works.
I had one of those do that the other day, and I looked at it and I thought, should I try to diagnose this? Should I try to say, no, just get another one.
All right. Well, we are the Personal Wealth Coach.
We are?
It's not coincidental, although some people may claim it is so, that the name of our radio program is the same name that the people giving the program have applied to their own business. It's amazing.
Wow.
Yes. So the Personal Wealth Coach is also an SEC-registered investment.
There's a correlation there.
Advisory firm. Yes.
Yeah, we are an investment advisor. We also are an investment advisor. Well, are we the investment advisory firm? No, it's a separate entity.
Well, there's an investment advisory firm of the same name in Salado, Texas.
It's technically the Wealth Coach LLC, but...
It does business by the Personal Wealth Coach.
Yeah, you got a DBA, and it's filed with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission. Not that that makes it special or anything. It's just that means that's who our regulator is. And, you know, the people who first missed Bernie Madoff for many, many years and then... really got after him after somebody at the firm calls him up when they very insightfully discovered the Ponzi scheme when Bernie called his sons together and said, hey, I've been running a Ponzi scheme.
And the sons go, hey, we should tell the SEC about this. And the SEC says, really? I don't really. Really?
And then,
we better do something about this.
This is the funny thing. The guy who decided to call up the SEC and tell him, they put in prison.
Yes.
Which I'm sure will encourage other people to do the same.
Right.
Hmm.
Amazing stuff.
He should have known.
Yes.
He should have.
He should have, actually.
I don't know that he should have.
I think he should have. I mean, if he's kind of the guy that was supposed to know about that sort of thing in the business, and he didn't.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's not what we're planning on talking about today.
Really?
If you would like to call in and ask us questions about the economy, finances, your investments, or anything to do...
Of that ilk.
With that ilkish stuff. But you can ask us about sports. You will just get incorrect answers.
Nah, I just simply say, I don't know.
Yeah, I've been insisting for years that the Bulls are going to make it to the Super Bowl.
I think the Milwaukee Beagles are going to win all the games.
Because I think... the Super Bowl needs a bowl in it. So the Bulls need to go to the Super Bowl.
The actual Super Bowl, in my opinion,
mm-hmm.
is at CERN.
Yeah, I agree.
That's because it goes round and round and round and
right.
round.
It's a nice circuit. Yeah. That's the kind of racing we like to watch.
Yeah, something that approaches the speed of light.
That's our race watching. So when we go to the races, we're looking at very small matter being destroyed.
So again, the telephone numbers to call in here and jolt our minds into some sense of actual reality are 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. Before we get to anything that we actually have data on.
Okay.
Let's do some rumor mongering.
Wow.
Some
okay.
Good ones.
Cool.
I have I always wanted to be a monger, so now I'm a rumor monger.
Good. I'm looking forward to hearing your mongering.
Have you read anything about?
I was muckling during the week.
About the leader of Mother Russia.
Well, I've heard a lot about nothing. I've heard a lot about his absence. That
he's disappeared.
But they insist that he's in such good shape. Did you hear the response?
Oh, yes. He can shake hands so well that my bones will break.
He will break the hands of the person who shakes his hand. Well, there's a lot of truth in that.
That is the same thing that they said about Boris Yeltsin when he disappeared from the scene. Exactly the same thing with a heart attack.
Hmm.
Interesting. So I'm rumor mongering here. The last time he was seen was the 1st of March, which is now 2 weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
And he's supposed to, on Monday, meet with the premier of Kazakhstan. But the official photographs of that meeting have been released already.
Well, the Russians have this control of time.
Right. There's a dateline around here somewhere.
They can take things that happened and say they didn't happen and think things that didn't happen and say they did happen and put them in their history. Well, we do that too.
Right. Yes, we do that regularly. We just don't do it as blatantly, I think, as is going on
here.
And
we don't do it in Russian.
Right. Well, if we did it in Russian, it would be quite blatant.
Right, right. And
so what I'm saying about the rumor mongering is Putin may be ill. He may, because he is the, it's like Steve Jobs at Apple.
He wasn't at all ill.
No, until he was dying.
Until he was dying, right.
And it's kind of like the Hugo Chavez story of, no, I'm fine, until he's off getting chemo in Cuba, which is an interesting...
That was an interesting little concept in and of itself.
Right.
The Cuban medicine being so far advanced.
Well, if you read any...
Compared with Venezuela, it probably is.
Yeah, watch the documentaries about the healthcare system of Cuba, and if you watch those documentaries, you'll be convinced that nobody ever dies there.
No, that's Japan.
All right, so that's the rumor mongering of the day. We've been talking about Putin quite a lot the last few months, the last few years, and the fact that he has disappeared from the stage is a bit of an interesting piece of the puzzle.
And there's a fascinating parallel during exactly the same time period. The Russian-speaking... Russian-paid, Russian-uniform-wearing soldiers that were not Russian
in
eastern
Ukraine
have pretty much stopped fighting.
Yes, they've stopped fighting, and the heavy weaponry has been withdrawn. This coincides...
Some
heavy weaponry has been... But it's been accepted by the Ukrainian government and the NATO folks that are saying, yes, that a lot of the heavy weaponry has been withdrawn.
And it coincided with the disappearance...
Of Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, I wonder.
It also coincides with the showing up of a very small amount of tanks and helicopters in Latvia, Estonia, and Lithuania from the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Some M1 Abrams, some Bradleys, Apaches. We also sent 300 A-10 Warthogs out there. So,
let me tell
which
you.
Is not a lot when we're looking at the scale of
no,
things we're talking about here.
No, but they are so phenomenally ugly, they would repel any rational person.
It's cutting-edge 1960s technology,
yes.
I will have you know. It is on par with the studio technology that we use to broadcast this very special program.
Yes.
There are computers involved in both places.
In both cases, it works, too.
Right, it does work. It works phenomenally well.
Yes.
I wouldn't say the same about the studio.
Well, particularly with his grinding noise.
Well, you know, if we just use the same technique they do in the manual of the A-10, you're just supposed to find the thing that's making the grinding noise and kick it.
Got
or
it.
Slap it hard.
Yes.
That should...
The You know, though, that the world military situation is growing more tense. Very much more tense. Because Sweden has sent 150 soldiers to occupy Gotland.
Oh.
Now, I know that you may think that
it's the land of gut?
G-O-T-L-A-N-D, Gotland.
You Gotland.
And you might think that that is big deal. Well, World War One, one of the crucial battle points of World War One was that island.
Yeah.
Off the coast of Sweden. Sweden claimed it. Russia wanted it. Germans said it is properly ours.
Right.
And it was a centerpiece. The battles, the naval battles in the Baltic Sea were a centerpiece of World War One. And the Swedes managed to hang on to it, not only through World War One, but World War Two. This is geeky stuff, but
important stuff.
The funny thing about that little island that most of us have never heard of, Gotland.
Right.
The funny thing about it, like 26,000 people on the island, 23,000 of which are in its capital.
Right.
Why is it a fascinating place? Well,
it's very strategically situated.
Yes, you basically, if you're trying to cross the Baltic Sea to get out into the Atlantic Ocean,
you kind of have
somebody
to go by
in,
there.
Somebody in Gotland can do you in pretty quickly. It's like having a big, gigantic aircraft carrier battleship sitting in the middle of the Baltic Sea, and it doesn't maneuver very well.
The Swedes also bought an undisclosed number of sonobuoys from the United States recently. The Swedes, just to let you know, the Swedes are not part of NATO. They're a Scandinavian country that's right up there next to Russia.
But they feel threatened by Russia on a regular basis.
Yeah,
yes.
And just a few months ago, there was this big exercise where the Swedes ran around in circles in their navy trying to find a Russian sub that had shown
up.
Couldn't find anything. And that terrified them. They're scared. Putin's been acting weird, and there's subs showing up right off the shore. So they
have actually surfaced partially in one of their main harbors and then went down and their Navy couldn't find them.
There's only one reason why that would happen. It's a saber rattling reason. It's Russia is saying we could mess you up whenever we want. So I am interested to see what the specialty is of those 150 soldiers that got sent out there.
They were actually artillery.
Which makes a lot of sense.
The island is, you know, we did a little research on it. It's peppered with pillboxes that are decrepit from World War II. But the thing is, and this is why, and people listening may think, oh boy, this, 150, that is an advanced team probably. The interesting thing about Gotland is it's one of those rare places in the world where it's almost like a thermometer. To tell if someone's getting a fever. Gotland has been unoccupied since not long after the fall of the Soviet Union. The Swedes are not real crazy about going to war. They've been very stringently neutral through several wars, and they were neutral in the U.S.-Soviet Union face-off. They pretty much like to stay neutral, but they are kind of like Switzerland, in that they successfully have stayed neutral by being very vigilant on militarily. And when they are not occupying Gotland, then there really is peace in the world, at least in that part of the world.
When there are soldiers on the ground in Gotland, it's because the world is on the brink of something nasty.
Now, the Swedes don't have a huge defense budget, and they don't spend a lot of time worrying about strategic domination, and they just basically do a lot of trade with a lot of people and make Volvos.
If you kind of run up the Baltic Sea to the northeast and just follow it around further to the east, you run into St. Petersburg.
Yes.
And that's out there. If you go straight south from Gotland, you run into Kaliningrad, which is a tiny little place.
It's called an enclave.
It's an enclave. It's a city that sits on the shore of the Baltic Sea. It doesn't freeze over generally. It's basically stuck smack in between Poland and Lithuania, but it's Russia.
But it's part of Russia, right?
It is Russia, and Kaliningrad has a warm water port into the Baltic Sea, that is probably where that sub came from that was messing around over in Sweden.
Yeah, and it's, so this week, not that we're able to do anything about it, but we do keep an eye on the fact that Russia is acts like they're preparing to go to war. And let's see, what else happened? Anything else happened this week?
I believe the week started on a Sunday, though that's arguable if you believe that business week starts on Monday. So that happened.
I mean, we have week and we have weekend, right?
Yeah, we've got more evidence of deflation.
Yes, the U.S. To quote the Wall Street Journal, U.S. producer price index falls, signaling weak inflation. Wait a minute. When prices are falling...
That's not weak inflation.
That's deflation.
Even if you're trying to be technical, you might say disinflation, but it sounds to me like deflation.
Yeah, you could maybe call it disinflation, but the prices for goods, not counting food and energy, dropped 0.1% in February at the producer price index.
Producer prices are down 0.7% versus a year ago, which means we have a year-over-year decline in prices across the board.
There's a quote in the journal, the strong dollar is forcing lower prices into U.S. manufacturers and will continue to do so for some time yet.
Right. The dollar...
I don't know how much some is.
The
but.
Dollar on Friday was at trading for 1 euro 6 pence.
Pence or cents?
Cents.
Okay,
pence. Pence, I guess, would be pounds. So
yeah, that would,
6 cents.
You just switched over to the other side
so
of the ocean.
So $1.06 gives you 1 euro, when about 8 months ago it was $1.50 gave you 1 euro.
I remember when it was 1.60 at one point. And this is a fascinating thing from a geeky economic point of view.
Which is the only point of view that we have.
Well, actually, we're not economists. We're geekonomists.
Yes, we're geekonomists.
We got geekonomists. Most of Northern Europe right now, the central banks and the actual banks, if you go to make a deposit, will pay you a negative interest rate.
Oh, that's nice of them. If you put your deposit with us, we will charge you money.
That's well, they don't say that. They say we're going to pay you a negative interest
rate.
We're
going to pay you.
You will pay us. The bank will guarantee that if you put $1 million in the bank for a year, they'll give you their best interest rates, and you will only get back just short of 1% less than you put in.
Well, that's called a weak interest rate. If we're going to talk about weak inflation, that's a weak interest rate. I would like to apply that to the electric bill. I would say I will gladly pay you, and I'll just put negative in front of my check as I write it out. I'll say negative $137, and when they cash it, it will go into my bank account instead of theirs.
Well, one of the fascinating things is apparently it's a Y2K sort of thing going on in Europe right now. Their programs that run their finances in the banks weren't designed to deal with negative interest rates.
Right.
And we talk about that. Now, to give you some idea of what's going on, of course, Ireland has, if you were to make a large deposit, you buy a big CD in an Ireland bank, you would get a return of a negative 0.015%.
I think that's not a lot to pay for the cool accent.
Right.
If you show up, because that's really what you're doing when you go to Ireland. If you're banking in Ireland and you're listening to this program, the only reason why you're doing it is for the cool accent.
Right. However, if Denmark and Switzerland will gladly pay you a negative 0.75% a year.
Very nice.
By the time they throw in a couple of fees for breathing in the bank lobby and things like that, it'll cost you 1% a year to deposit your money in the bank.
Oh, well, isn't that nice?
And this is the funny thing. People are rushing to deposit their money in Denmark and Switzerland.
Well, there's a really interesting...
And they have a very good reason for that, by the way.
Because they're not failing.
Well, no, it's not they're not failing. Neither Denmark nor Switzerland use the euro.
Yeah.
And the expectation is, if you'll think about the fact that the euro has fallen from, well, easily $1.50, so it's fallen roughly a third.
Yeah.
So
33% drop.
Holding compared with the dollar. So if you were buying things that are priced in dollars, you, you have seen, and you have euros, which a lot of people do, in Europe, oddly.
Strange. Why would they have euros in Europe?
A lot of Greeks have them, too.
Very confusing.
Anyway, the what you've seen, what you would have seen, is a one-third loss in value, a 33% loss in the value in your cash. Now, you may think, well, how much does the average European actually buy from America? I hate to break this to you, folks, but oil is priced in dollars.
Yes. While we have been experiencing a 50% drop in the price of oil, they have experienced a drop in the price of oil, but not a whole lot.
Well, actually, this is what's strange. If you take that one-third and you reverse it, it's 50, becomes 50%.
Right.
So they, because of the appreciation of the dollar versus the euro,
the amount of drop in the price of oil for most of Europe has been very close to zero, particularly when you include the fact that they have just raised the taxes almost across all of Europe on petrol.
Yes.
Which is what they call it there, although
They call it benzene in a lot of places.
Yeah, I still think it's gas, but they tend to think
it's really
that
not
is,
gas.
It's not really gas. It's a liquid. But, but hey,
well,
confused.
It can turn into a gas.
We're confused and proud of it.
Yes, and we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
I think you need to turn down your radio.
And you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
I think we're doing okay. How are you?
Pretty good. Enjoy the show. Heard you guys talking about the euro. I'm a retired Army, and I was on a training mission in England, training with the British Army. This was in 2009.
Did it make you click your heels together when you salute?
Go ahead.
No, we didn't have to do that, but if I remember the exchange rate back then, this was just in 2009, I was paying $2 and $3 for a euro back then.
No, you're paying it for pound sterling.
Yeah, and it's probably part of the exchange rate plus
the cost.
Well, you did.
You could use pounds or euros.
Euros were about $1.50, $1.60 at that point. So if you were paying $2 for a euro, somebody was smiling as they took your money.
Yeah, probably so.
But they do that a lot. So.
Yeah, there's a lot of smiling going on over there.
Yeah, the fact that the guy was in a dark alley that you were exchanging currency with might have had something to do with it. Or in the airport, which is the same thing.
Yeah, the airport where they ask you to put your arm through the stall before they exchange the money, and then there's a guillotine that just the blade drops, and they say, all right, here's your money.
No, actually, these were at regular bank exchanges.
Yeah, you're right.
We'll just hang up and listen.
Okay.
I appreciate the call.
It cost him an arm and a leg. Well, this only cost him an arm under those circumstances, not an arm and a leg.
It's just as a side piece of absolutely useless trivia, but that's most
of
what
we provide.
Our favorite
kind, yeah.
The phrase, they'll charge you an arm and a leg, comes from portraiture painting in the Renaissance, when you could hire an artist to paint your portrait, and the face was relatively inexpensive, but if you included an arm, a hand, or a leg, the prices tripled.
Mm.
So they charged for the arm and the leg, and that became charging an arm and a leg, and we liked the way it sounds.
Do you remember that I was talking about Sweden and how stalwart Sweden is?
Yes.
Sweden is currently holding the record high-low interest rate. They're on a negative 0.85 officially, and it's actually less if you go to the bank. You actually pay the bank over about 1.25% to hold your money for a year.
All right, so I'm going to throw another piece of the puzzle onto the table.
Okay,
and you can tell me where it fits.
I'm going to see this. This man, your metaphor is getting stretched out here. So we have a table, a piece, a puzzle,
puzzles,
and fits.
Okay. Yes, I'm going to throw a fit. IKEA has just closed a whole series of its stores in Russia over the anti-homosexuality laws that were passed there, which are brutal. They are brutal. They're not the kind and gentle anti-homosexual laws that we complain about here as in marriage, whether or not it's legal. It's whether or not you go to prison for coming out there. It's whether or not you're legal to be beaten up on the street. So IKEA is closing these stores in Russia, and it happens to be at the same time that they're stationing troops on Gotland and ordering sonobuoys and waving their fists at Russia.
That might have been their excuse for closing the stores in Russia, but I strongly suspect they just want to get out before it blows up.
A lot of people are closing stores in Russia because a lot of the stores, American stores, McDonald's, has been discussing not taking rubles for its food being sold in Russia.
And Putin was also saying that they're going to kick McDonald's out of Russia.
Right. Well, they closed down a whole bunch of McDonald's in Moscow, but the reason McDonald's was like, okay, this is fine with that, because we're losing money hand over fist. You pay us in rubles, the next day the ruble's worth half of what it was the day before.
Mm.
That's an exaggeration.
But this is, and why, you know, we're carrying on about something that to other geeky minds is critical.
Yes,
but
we have a lot of fun with this critical thing that nobody else even knows about.
But this is, the reason we do that is we've read a little history, and I don't know, even in the movies about the lead up to World War, there have been a lot of good movies, TV movies and regular movies about the lead up, the time period to World War II, people who were in Germany,
right,
who saw that things were deteriorating and were able to get out, and other people who said, oh, no, this will never happen.
People saw it. People left.
And there are...
Einstein is one of those people. He left because he said, this is not going the way I want it to be, so he came to the United States.
What's going on in Russia right now, the parallels between what went on in Germany in the lead-up time periods to both wars, but particularly to World War II, is sort of striking. The Germans cracked down on homosexuals.
Yeah.
They cracked down on dissent. Individuals who were voicing publicly
opposition suddenly
to the
disappeared.
Policies of the new National Socialist Government, which, by the way, was anything but socialist, it was far right wing, was the parallels are pretty impressive, to say the least. And
just like Putin is anything but socialist, he's far right wing.
So the issue is that we bring this up because there's some threats in the world,
and
they're very real.
To me, just to give you guys out there a little semblance of why we're talking about this so much, when you sit down in the movie theater and you're watching an apocalyptic movie, and at the beginning scene, one of the loved ones of one of the major characters coughs, you know what it means. We're hearing a lot of coughing going on from that area of the world. It may just be random coughing. But when we look at history, when it coughs like that, you need to start paying attention.
Well, you are listening to Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And which Lynn Woodley always tries to insert himself into somehow.
Well, he's part of us somehow, some way.
Okay. Well, anyway.
He's an honorary part of the program.
Yeah, he is. He's an honorary part of the program.
He's honorary or honorary.
Yeah.
Honorary.
Yeah, something like that. Anyway, so the telephone number is near 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. And we have some commercials to play so that Town Square Media can actually continue to pay our electric bills in here.
And maybe actually replace this thing in here
that's not gonna happen.
Is grinding itself to death as it dies or something.
We'll just have to figure out something. We can bring in some whole grain and see if we can grind it in the process.
We probably
leave
could.
With some
you know,
flour.
We could do that.
My wife likes flour, so I'm supposed to get flowers, not flour.
That'll do it every time. Anyway, we'll be back after these important words from Town Square sponsors. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And while we've just not had exactly a flood of telephone calls, the numbers remain the same. 773-1400 if you're in East Bell County. Otherwise,
1-866-597-1400 anywhere else within the sounds of our voices.
I think we had, though, in the first half of the first hour, 100% increase in phone calls over last week. We had none last week, and we had one this week. So
I believe it was more than 100% increase.
More than 100?
Yeah, I think it was an infinite increase.
Whoa. Okay, and now we get, we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hey, how you guys doing? It's Paul.
Hi, Paul.
I have a specific question related to a 401k account.
Okay.
I left employment with my previous company about 4 months ago. Had a 401k with them. I can leave it there with them. They don't invest in their own company. I get to choose my investments. That's all interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Or I can move it to wherever I want to. The interesting thing is I have a small 401k loan in there. Hey, don't judge me till you've met me.
No. I'm just the warning's going off. Danger, yeah. Will Robertson.
So I have two options that I know of, unless you guys can give me another one. One is I could continue to leave my 401k there, and I could pay that loan off on a quarterly basis,
mm-hmm.
and no penalties or anything like that.
Right.
The other thing is if I move my 401k, this is my understanding, I either have to pay off the loan because once you go out, it becomes a taxable event, mm-hmm. according to what I understand. I don't believe there's another option where someone says, bring me your 401k account, we'll move it over here, and by the way, we'll move your loan over here.
You are, I think, completely correct.
How old are you?
I'm 60.
Okay, so you are over the age of 59 and one half. Which
that is correct. No penalty.
The U.S. government and five-year-olds are the ones that measure ages with half years. So,
which tells you. And by the way, this was in a law passed by Congress.
Congress must be five-year-olds. That's
right.
What I'm guessing. Which, you know, in a sense, that's why term limits don't work, is because they throw a fit. Oh, I want to stay. Okay.
I never thought of it that way. There's something there, yes.
So the U.S. government says that if you are under the age of 59 and a half and you have a loan in your 401k and you move it over, it's not only a taxable event, but you also have a 10% penalty on that loan. Now,
I say it's a non-deductible excise tax.
Before other people get too excited about loans, I'm not judging you, but I'm going to tell the problems with taking a loan from a 401k.
The interest rates are too high.
Yeah, extremely high. You may only be charged 1% or 2% on the loan. What is the interest rate that they're charging you on the loan?
I think it's 4%.
Okay, you got a 4% loan from a 401k. The money in the 401k was deposited before taxes were paid on it. That's why they have this taxable event. When you take money out of the 401k in a loan, you're not paying taxes on that money either. Looks great. Okay, I'm only paying 4% on the loan, and I can spend this loan. Did you do it like for home repairs or a car or something like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Something like that.
Something like that. So I've done that. Now I'm going to start paying back this loan. Well, where does the money come from that you're paying the money to pay it back? It's money that you've already paid taxes on, correct? So if you're in, let's just say you're in the 15% tax bracket, which is pretty reasonable. I'm just making a rough estimate. So you pay 15% and then the 4% and you put that back into the 401k. Well, at some point, you're going to want to take that money out of the 401k to live on, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
When you take that money out, it is taxable. So say you're still in the 15% tax bracket. So you've got to pay 15% taxes on that money because you haven't paid taxes on it, even though the money that you put back in there to pay the loan back
is already paid taxes
after tax money.
Yeah.
So now your actual interest rate is 34%
plus
on that loan.
Now you got to add to this.
Yeah.
Let's say the market goes up 7% a year, which is a good long-term average, okay? Let's say your investments would have gone up 7% a year. So there's an additional 7% interest rate. Now, you did it. It's all behind you. And
we're
right
not,
now.
We're not coming down on you. We're just bringing out the fact that there it looks like a really good deal, and there's some hidden charges involved.
We just try to warn people. But this
you're
is
just using me as a teachable moment.
Yes.
No, we're using you as a punching bag, actually.
Right, so we're very sorry, but it's so much fun.
But you sound like you can handle it. Hey,
I tell you what, I'm going to listen to you guys talk because I'm getting ready to go into a car wash, and it'll be very loud. So
okay.
I'm going to hang up and listen to you guys talk.
Well, you could just leave it on, and we could listen to the car wash. It'd be just as educational.
that could be true.
The sound of spinning brushes is probably just as interesting as our voices.
At least.
So.
Hey, the other thing about this loan from a 401k, the decision process that you need to make has nothing to do with a loan. The bottom line to it is, yeah, okay, well, you've got a small loan. You said that it's a taxable event, like you took the money out if you roll the 401k over to an IRA, for example.
Or another 401k.
Yeah, but I'm going to make a recommendation to you, and that's what you stop and look at where it's invested in your 401k.
Right.
The quality of the investments that you have there. Because, very frankly, in many cases, what we've seen in 401ks is that the combination of the expenses and the quality of the available investments makes it relatively expensive to leave money in a 401k. Now, that's not true in 100% of the cases.
It's something that needs a lot of research.
But if, for example, you can go to a very, very low-cost mutual fund or something similar and you can set up a good asset allocation with an IRA, there are certain advantages there that, in most cases, trump the advantages of leaving it at the 401k. Now, let me caveat this very carefully in saying, if somebody says, roll over your 401k to an IRA, and they hand you a prospectus, which says, read the prospectus carefully prior to investing, and then they promptly hand you a piece of paper that says, sign right here.
That says that you've read the prospectus.
Yeah, then you're probably making a really bad move because the expenses are so high, they don't want to let you know that they're there.
There's a couple of things to do right off basically, there's like cliff notes. If you go to Morningstar.com, you can look at expenses very quickly, whereas with the prospectus, I highly recommend reading the prospectus. But you can run into a brick wall very quickly if the way you're doing research on all the mutual funds out there is by reading each prospectus.
If a person reads a lot of prospectuses, now you and I have read a lot of prospectuses.
That's why we're weird.
And you may lose all social connectivity.
You'll
at that
start
point,
talking you know. About CERN and
and Gotland.
Yeah, and Gotland. So when I'm just saying that because, generally speaking, if you're rolling the IRA over to someone or to another investment somewhere, and there is someone physically helping you do it, that someone is getting paid.
What?
That's amazing. I know.
No. I've had them actually say to me.
You're not paying me.
The company pays me.
Right. Where'd the company get the money? Come on. Let's be realistic.
Schwab is offering this robo-investor service for next to nothing.
Yeah. Well,
isn't that really neat?
There are some actual benefits there.
Yeah, but I mean, the fact that it only uses Schwab Investments is purely coincidental.
Right. So the concept here is you got to be clear. Let me kind of give some reason why I'm interjecting here is because I'm giving some background on the 401k. Before we get to the rollover process, something in the law that is not very clear is that the 401k money, even the money that you put in versus the money that the company put in, does not technically belong to you. It is technically the property of the employing company. And while they must manage it for your benefit, they have to act as fiduciaries for you.
Well, they're supposed to.
They're supposed
to.
But
they don't always.
The reality is that if they have a decision at some point in their internal management to switch the 401k provider or to do a new audit or change the way the 401k is run, it can take many months.
And you're locked out for that time period.
The same reason that we used you as a punching bag, we're going to use Enron as a punching bag because there were a lot of people in the Enron 401k that were no longer employed at Enron. that for 6 months were not able to touch their assets in the 401k because they were changing the administrator of the 401k while the company was failing.
Which, so, by the way, is not an unusual event.
Right, when because administration of 401ks is a technical area, and you can save money on it if you're losing money elsewhere. You can decide to save money there, and the transfer process is pretty complex. I'm not saying 401ks are bad. They are an excellent way of saving, your especially if the employer is matching you. But recognize that you do not have the same kind of freedoms in a 401k as you do in an individual retirement account. The individual retirement accounts have their own dangers, and now I'll hand it back to you.
Well, again, leaving your money with a company in a 401k has a certain risk to it, and it has it varies with each company, but again, being very careful what you do there is generally speaking, I've not yet seen a 401k other than the self-directed versions that are optimal. Now, there may be one out there somewhere, but
I agree.
Even if you do use Schwab's Blue or go to, for instance, Schwab or Vanguard or someplace where they have asset allocation programs that you can ask questions of, in most cases, you're going to be paying a lower expense and be better off there. And the individual retirement account that you establish is literally not a company retirement account, but an individual retirement account. And is, if you're willing to take responsibility for yourself and your money, is commonly a better place to have the money. And again, I want to emphasize there are exceptions to this. The exceptions are, if somebody is going to sell you something that is really weird and exotic and costs a lot of money to get into, and which is what people like to sell.
Absolutely give the biggest warnings available if the thing that you're rolling into has a surrender charge that lasts many, many years.
They have a surrender charge, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is that you want more freedom, not less, by going into an IRA. And there's a whole world of caveat emptor out there where now you're responsible for yourself, and you've got to protect yourself against the world. This is what I mean. This is kind of the segue that we kind of expect. We believe that you should be working with a fiduciary.
Right.
We are fiduciaries, which is a prejudice on our end. It is a conflict. We think that the best way of managing money is through someone that's actually trying to manage money in your best interest rather than a company's best interest.
But let me add one caveat to the caveat.
Well, let's caveat the caveat.
Yes, and that is, when you try to find someone to assist you in managing your money, there are two qualifications that are critical. Number one, the person be willing to give you a document saying that they are acting in your best interest and that they are acting as a fiduciary. It's a nice word.
It's generally called the ADV Part 2.
Form ADV Part 2, which is only the government could come up with something as silly as that.
Yeah.
The other thing is, very frankly, the level of expertise of the person with whom you are dealing. Because the bad side to fiduciary activity is that an individual can decide, hey, I want to be an investment advisor, and they pass a very simple test that knows that they know how to break the rules effectively, or don't. Basically, they understand what the rules are. And immediately, bingo, they've registered, they have filed all their paperwork, and they have said, I'm going to be, and they may really be intentionally the best, I mean, they really want to operate in your best interest, but they are ignorant. They don't know what they're doing. Matter of fact, in many cases, I've seen individuals who started on their own who, by and large, knew less about investing than their clients did. But they had a suit and a briefcase and a sign outside their office. So the certifications are critical. And there's a few of them that are at the top of the list. CIMA, CFA.
CFP.
Well, I'm a little CFP. I got CFP after my name, but I can tell you that an awful lot of people who have CFP after their name are primarily interested in selling stuff that generates high commission. So I don't know if it's true about the others. But anyway, those are those are all things to be concerned about. And again, if you have a, if you have, very frankly, I think it's probably at about the 500,000 level right now that an investment advisor becomes a pretty critical thing to have, a fiduciary investment advisor. Below that, there are some good positions in. And again, I want to express a little bit of prejudice here. If I remember the public, and I didn't know a lot about investing, and I said, where would I want to go? And again, you know, so I'm saying I, not you. I would say I would wander over to Vanguard's website and spend some time there for a very simple reason. It's the only first. Yeah, I could say they're good, wonderful. They are owned by their mutual fund investors.
Yeah, they're owned by their investors.
They're not owned by their corporate investors who said you got to make a profit. They are a nonprofit organization, and they do a pretty darn good job in most areas. And again, I would pay $150 or whatever it is a year to go to Morningstar and get their advice.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there are some other good, inexpensive places to look if you're not at a huge portfolio yet. I mean, American Funds will help you. You can go to Fidelity, and they'll help you.
American Funds, though, if you go to American Funds, you're going to pay a commission. You're going to go through a broker.
Right. And there are ways.
You'll be broker when you're done.
Right. There are ways to avoid paying commissions there, but it gets more complex.
Right. So we're almost out of time for this hour, but we have a caller on 773-1400. Go ahead.
Good morning. This is Bill from Temple.
Hello, Bill Von Temple.
I was thinking about, I guess you say it was borrowing from my 401k to purchase a house.
Mm.
And I was wondering, you're saying it's a loan, I have to pay it back.
Like, and I would be really hesitant to do that, actually.
Yeah. If you're doing it, let's roll back and say we're almost out of time here. 401k money is retirement money. It is designed by the Internal Revenue Code in Congress to be used to pay income in retirement. The idea of taking a large amount out to pay for something like a house, particularly at a loan, it's going to be a lot more expensive than getting a mortgage.
And you're far better off getting a mortgage and then setting up a systematic withdrawal from your 401k to make the house payments.
A short-term mortgage if you're looking at pure expenses. But we are about out of time. We'll continue this talk. Evidently, this is a big one that we've been neglecting for a while. So we'll talk about 401ks more next hour.
All right. Thank you for calling. And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. And if you'd like to contact us off the air, we have a voicemail over the weekends. And during the week, we have real live human beings that answer the phone. The telephone number locally is 947-1111. Or
you can reach that toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can email us at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com, where you can listen to podcasts of this program, read about our philosophy, and get some links to some other education.